Welcome to Saving the Game.
This is episode 6, Video Games, recorded Monday, August 27th of 2012, with your hosts Peter and Brandon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Saving the Game. This is likely to be a little bit shorter episode because we are without Grant, and he's off being a dad right now. So Brandon and I are here.
Yes, hello.
And we've decided to tackle a little bit shorter topic that Grant isn't quite as into as we are. We're going to tackle the topic of our video games evil.
And probably a little bit more about video games in general.
Yeah, probably just a little bit. This is very likely going to be the shortest episode of Saving the Game so far, but we're going to try and make the time that we do have interesting. Why don't we start off with a couple of our favorite video games before we get into this? What are you really fond of?
You know, I actually have to say it right now, because the thing that I've been taking solace in after I've been sitting down and editing this show for like hours and hours, and I'm like, I'm done. I can't look at another waveform. And I go out there, and I'm currently replaying a game called Dark Cloud. It was pseudo-RPG, pseudo-like action game Zelda thing for the PlayStation that came out a while back that I really, really loved for reasons I can't really describe.
Well, I've been playing around with Jagged Alliance 2, particularly some mods for that lately, which makes me into an enormous, terrible nerd. Because that game originally came out, I believe, back in 1998, and I have been playing it ever since then, more or less continuously. I've taken breaks here and there, but it's been in kind of quasi-continuous development for several years now. I believe the code went open source after the company that originally created it went out of business, and so the mod community has, like, latched onto it and has just been going crazy with it.
And Jagged Alliance 2, I'm looking it up right now, it's a tactical role-playing game.
It's an old-school, turn-based kind of mix of strategy, squad-based tactics, and some lightweight role-playing. It's a lot of fun, but it's kind of grognardy. It's incredibly complex and only getting more so as time goes by. And I play it with some mods that make it even more complex than the current state of the base game, which makes me sort of ridiculous, but I enjoy it. So,
as a sort of sidetrack, I do enjoy a little bit of the slower and more tactical games. Like, I enjoy old school role playing games where you think like the original Final Fantasy, where you have your whole guys are lined up on one side of the screen, and you're facing your enemies on another side of the screen, and you have maps and menus that you can go
through. Ah, the Red Rover-style combat.
Yes.
Gotcha.
There's just something that, you know, the sad thing about it is most games are now going away for it for more action things where I'm controlling less of my allies and more just my main character, and at that point I'm like, well, that kind of is getting rid of the excitement I'm having about this game. Admittedly, there are some games that do it and do it well, like Kingdom Hearts, where I loved it, where I was only controlling the one main character, but for the most part, I enjoy things like Final Fantasy X, where I had all the time in my world to consider what I had to do and take my action and choose which attack for this character would be the most effective, and it made me feel smart, and I think that's why I play them and enjoy them, as opposed to the Twitch gameplay where it's like, oh my gosh, this person's attacking me.
So we've kind of tipped our hand a little bit here. Obviously, we don't think video games are inherently evil. We'd like to get into a little bit of the why. If you listen to our episode 1, our role-playing games evil, a lot of this is probably going to sound very familiar, which is one of the reasons why I've already been mentioning that this is probably going to be a short episode. But I'd like to start off with a couple of scripture verses, because we're a Christian gaming podcast after all, and it's nice to stay grounded in scripture. So I'm going to start off with the verse that we actually used for the Our Role-Playing Games Evil episode, which is Romans 14:16, just from the New International Version this time. It's just, do not allow what you consider good to be spoken of as evil. And then we also have from 1 Corinthians, Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. And that is 1 Corinthians 9:19-23. And then we had one more from Psalm 78. This is verses 1-4. My people hear my teaching, listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth with a parable. I will utter hidden things, things from of old, things we have heard and known, things our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from their descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done.
So I'm going to ask, what do these verses mean, and why are we bringing them out there? Because I frankly have no idea.
Okay, so the first one is pretty obvious. We think that video games are potentially good. We don't want the entire medium to be written off by believers.
This is kind of going back to what you said a little bit about how this is going to sound familiar to what we talked about role-playing games. However, I know we've discussed this in depth off the mics, and I think the general consensus we've kind of come to is that while role-playing games and video games are not inherently evil, there's probably way more of a case for there being bad video games, because there's also things like bad movies. Whereas a role-playing game is a tool, a video game is more of a confined work of art put out there by a certain individual.
Absolutely. That is definitely one of the things that we wanted to get into. And then the passage from Corinthians was basically kind of the old Christian be in the world and not of it. That's one of the better verses for that principle in Scripture.
It is, and then definitely a be in the world and not of it, which is a good thing for all Christians to know. But it also brings up something that I know we talked about earlier, where you, Peter, told me the reason it's important for Christians to be involved in role-playing games and the video game community, and really most every community out there, is that if there are no Christians involved in those communities, then there are no Christians involved in those communities. Just looking at where Jesus himself went, Jesus did not surround himself usually with people who completely and totally were the saved. In fact, he more went out to the people who were lost.
Oh, certainly. I mean, you even look at, you know, who he selected his disciples from. I mean, Simon Peter was basically an insurgent. Matthew was a tax collector. I mean, this was not like the most high and mighty, savory group of people. This was kind of a rough and tumble group of disciples.
Exactly. And it's kind of sad, personally, for me, when I see a lot of churches and things like that now shunning things and not accepting them, when they could be opening themselves up to a whole lot more tools and seeing the world as basically Jesus saw it.
The passage from Psalms is kind of there to invoke the same thing as the C.S. Lewis quote that we referenced back in episode 1. The value of myth is that it takes all the things that you know and restores to them the rich significance that has been hidden by the veil of familiarity. Between that and Psalms, it's, I think, one of the really interesting things about video games is that they put you inside the story, but you're not the writer. At least not completely. In fact, did you ever read those Choose Your Own Adventure games when you were a kid?
Actually, I read a few of them. So I understand where you're coming from, but I didn't read a lot.
Yeah, I used to love those things back then. But at any rate, they're these little tiny books, and they've got this great branching storyline, and there's usually like one good ending in there, and you can almost never find it in lots of bad ones. There are these little adventure tales. It tells you a story up to a certain point, and then you have to make some kind of a choice. And, you know, you go left or you go right, or, you know, you take a bus or you take a car or whatever it is to kind of further the story.
Do you chase
and...
the guy who just shot your friend, or stay to tend to your friends?
Yeah, that sort of thing. I don't, because they're written for children, they're not usually that brutal, but it's, do you chase the ice cream thief, or do you help up the vendor who's been knocked down? It's probably closer.
Yeah, the important point is it's a choice of two actions that will have drastically different consequences, but they...
Well, and some of them were as simple as, you know, do you take the left passage or the right passage? Or...
Oh, yeah. Sometimes they were innocuous,
yeah.
But a lot of the times they were polar opposite choices.
Right, and so a lot of modern video games, especially kind of the more story-driven ones, give you kind of a similar kind of dynamic. They tell the story up to a point, and then they let you make, like, one of the more important choices in that story. And I think that can be incredibly valuable. It's a medium where you get to actually determine the morality of usually the central character, if not one of them.
Well, I'm gonna stop you right there, because I think that is certain video games. There are plenty
yes.
of other video games where it is just, like, an interactive movie.
Well, and there's some where it's not even that. I mean, there's no moral complexity at all in Pac-Man or Space Invaders, for instance. Either you play
yes.
the game or you don't.
In a sense, we're hitting at that there's three camps that video games are falling into. The first camp is Pac-Man, where it's really just a interesting pastime.
Just a little diversion kind of a
yes.
thing, yeah.
This is where, like, Angry Birds will fit into. While there's a pseudo-story of Angry Birds, the story is basically pigs have stolen your eggs, throw yourself at their house to destroy them. Which, there's very little
Even
moral...
that's more story than Pac-Man.
Yes. Donkey Kong, there's an implied story of that's your girlfriend Pauline up there and your jump man and you have to get over the barrels. But they aren't, you know, really handling really big moral issues, and there are still games that come out today, which is why I brought up Angry Birds, that fit into that category.
Right. Most puzzle games would fall into that category, too. Things like Bejeweled, or Critical Mass, or geez, Solitaire.
Also, rhythm-based games, like Dance Dance Revolution, and stuff like that that have come out now, are definitely in that also, where it's just an activity.
Sure, or even audio-derived games on the PC, like Audio Surfer Beat Hazard, would fall into that. There's no story at all to those games, you know. It's like you've got some colored blocks, match the colors, win points, continue playing.
Yes.
Okay, so what's the second camp?
Well, the second camp is what I'm going to be calling the movie camp. And this is basically where, for the most part, you're just a character and you're following a story
along.
So
this is your Half-Life 2 or your... Actually, kind of your standard first-person shooter would usually fall
yes,
into this,
most
right?
of them do. There are some first-person shooters that do let you have choices that I have seen. None of them readily come to my mind, but for the most part, a lot of them aren't really concerned about telling the story. The story is what happens in between. It's what gets you to the next gallery full of bad guys that you can then shoot lead into.
Yeah, I think also any kind of, like, a racing game that has a little bit of an implied story, like, you know, moving up in a championship or something as you win races would fall into this.
They could have a story, or it could just be, like, a regular diversion of get in a car and drive, at which point it fits into the first category. Probably along with sports games also, which might have a story if you have a sports game where you're following the career of someone, but I've never really seen that. It's more just, oh, you pick a team and you play, and that way goes more into the non-story
right.
having things.
A lot of adventure games with just one solution, like the old Sierra adventure games, like King's Quest and stuff. There were two choices in there. The one that advanced the story and the one that got you killed at pretty much any any juncture.
One of the best examples that I would see about the interactive story game, probably, we've mentioned first-person shooters, they definitely are a huge genre of it, but probably the best example of it would be the game Dragon's Lair and Space Ace and those things like that, where you go through and you're controlling the movements of a guy and you have to basically press buttons at the certain amount of time so he doesn't die. So the options are die, continue the story.
Yeah, that's fairly similar to the Sierra games. It's just instead of quick time events going throughout the entire thing, you've got puzzles to solve in a Sierra
yes.
game. But yeah, that's pretty much the same principle there. And then your third camp, I would guess, would be the ones where you actually have some control over the story, the Bethesda and BioWare type
games?
Yes,
I was going to bring up Mass Effect, where you were supposed to have a control over the story. The amount of control you had over the story, I'm going to say, was kind of limited. I was surprised at how the little stuff mattered, but I was also shocked that the big stuff didn't matter at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to turn this into an entire discussion about how BioWare writes things, but it's interesting that it's the same basic plot, but you can affect all the details.
And, well, somehow I kind of like that, and I kind of see the necessariness for it of the video games. There have been games with multiple endings that have happened.
And I think we should kind of acknowledge up front that these three camps that you've kind of spelled out here basically represent one end of a spectrum, the exact middle point of the spectrum, and the other end of the spectrum.
Yes.
So, like, way over on the no story end, you've got things like Pac-Man and Tetris. And then all the way over on the you control the story end of the spectrum, you have things like most Bethesda yeah. games, where you really have an incredible amount of freedom of action. Bethesda, by the way, if anybody is unfamiliar, is the company that does the Fallout and Elder Scrolls games these days.
Yeah, they did Fallout, starting at Fallout 3, I believe.
They started Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, and of course all the expansion packs for those. And then Daggerfall, Morrowind, Oblivion, and Skyrim are all Bethesda games, and they have another one called Dishonored coming out that's kind of in a similar vein, but a new setting.
I actually know them better for those, because I got a great game called Morrowind, and I started playing a little bit of it, and I loved it. And then Oblivion came out, and I played a little of that. And I have yet to play Skyrim, but I know that, and I was shocked when I realized that Bethesda meant Bethesda, Maryland, which is right around where I live, and I'm like, oh, awesome.
Have you ever tried to get, like, a tour of the studio or anything since you're right
there? I have not, but I'm sure I could probably try at some point. Anyway, I would give major props to Bethesda and the things they have done for their non-linear storytelling, because you can go and you can do whatever. I've played hours upon hours of Oblivion on several different characters that I've made, and I have probably not gotten past two or three quests into the main quest. That's how loaded and non-linear this game is. I can go and I can do whatever I want. I don't know how much of the actual main game story you can change and control in Oblivion, because I think following the main plot is a pretty linear path, so it kind of fits a little into the middle section at some points, but they have definitely come out with a whole bunch of different branches by putting up different options and other optional content that you can go into.
Yeah, this is all very fascinating, but we're not just a general video games podcast, so how does this apply back to our faith?
Well, this applies back to our faith in probably the same way that movies apply back to our faith, in the fact that video games, while they have been derided in many religious cultures, because as sad as it is, I know many religious cultures are the slowest to change and the slowest to accept new things.
Well, and let's pause there for just a second and be honest that video games aren't entirely undeserving of that kind of criticism.
I understand.
You've got stuff out there where pretty much the entire point of the game is violence and mayhem. You've got a lot of the stuff that Rockstar Games puts out falls into this category. The Grand Theft Auto games are pretty much just violence and mayhem. The Manhunt games are certainly, if their advertising is to be believed, pretty much nothing but violence and mayhem. So there's definitely some pretty objectionable stuff out there. On the sex end of things, I would say probably the Leisure Suit Larry games would qualify. There's stuff out there that's not so good.
Yes.
You know, there's definitely kind of the segment of the industry that goes for the lowest common denominator, both in content and in business practices. I'm thinking there of Zynga. It's not an innocent medium. It's not just like role-playing games where it's a tool and the content is all a reflection of the people at the table. It tends to be the reflection of the development team, which usually isn't present when the game is being played.
You said it's not an innocent medium. And to that I would say there is no such thing as an innocent medium.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, books have done the exact same thing. If I did a little more research and learning, I could probably list off...
Oh, I can list a couple of things that are selling very well right now at the bookstore that I work at that I would consider to be extremely objectionable.
And they've been around for a whole long time, and there have been plenty of people who have railed against books like that. Movies have been the exact same thing. Video games are just the newest way to deliver a story to an individual. Because role-playing games, it is a very personal method for delivering a story, because it's usually going to be one person sitting around a table running a story for their friends. So you have to base it on the individual, and the content creator is right there. The only time where it's kind of not that is if you're running a module, in which someone writes down their adventure and sells it for other people to run. And those could have moral themes and different things, and at which point it's going to get back to the exact same thing about books and buyer beware, is you have to be wary about what you stick into your mind.
Yeah, exercising discernment is really important for consuming any media. Some of us can handle different things than others of us. Something that might be fine for one person might be very difficult for another. This is kind of where the do not cause your weaker brother to stumble concept comes in a little bit here. I think also, though, and I will admit that I'm not always the very best at this in any media, but sometimes it's good to just kind of try and filter stuff, and maybe if something's a little objectionable, just kind of leave it alone, regardless of what the reviews of it are saying and so forth. I don't know. It's an interesting question. What do you think, Brandon? How do you kind of deal with that in your life?
Well, a lot of times in, you know, role-playing game podcasts, you have people pull out obscure titles and works of art or games to pump their geek cred. I'm actually going to pump my Christian cred right here and bring up the fact that when I was a child, I grew up with a set of Christian-made videos entitled McGee and Me, and it was about a teen who was this artist, and he was a Christian and had a Christian family, and he drew a little cartoon character he called McGee. And that guy...
I think you might be pumping your Christian and geek cred at the same time right now, Brandon. Because I've heard of McGee and Me. I think I even read some of the books that were based off of that.
It was a very interesting show, and there was one where it had to do with this exact topic here. The kid, I don't remember the guy's name, he sneaks off to go see this movie. He does this very elaborate Ferris Bueller-esque system so that when his parents knock on his door, that it plays a recording of him saying that he's drawing right now, come back later. and as he's sneaking out to the movies, and of course, the batteries wear down, and they end up discovering it's a fraud, and it's a bad movie, and he ends up being horrified by this movie. And when he's walking back after, you know, being horrified by this movie that he saw, it plays a song where it goes, stick it in your mind, it's going to stay right there in your heart. Which is basically the exact same thing that we're dealing with here. If you choose to read books or watch movies or even play games that might not be the best for you, then it's going to stick with you. Now, that's not to say that you can't play violent video games. I have played violent video games, and I don't think that they completely, totally control me, but then again, I think I can deal with them. I'd say it's up to the individual and their own individual walk to figure out what they can handle and what they can't. Now, there are certainly things that are irredeemable out there, and there are some things where you are playing bad things, but it's a examination, and it's more about letting us see the evil in what we do, and it helps us, what's it called,
I think the first Overlord game was like that, where you're ostensibly playing the villain, but what you're really doing is cleaning up after the last group of heroes that had gotten corrupted and had turned evil themselves. The second one was pretty much just playing a straight-up bad guy, but the first one was kind of interesting that way.
Yeah, and there's the line, I believe you mentioned. It's a new first-person shooter where you're
going through... It's a third-person shooter, but yeah. It's kind of Heart of Darkness in video game form. It chronicles this Spec Ops team kind of crossing the moral event horizon and sliding further and further into madness. That was actually one of the more disturbing things that I have ever played. If you're interested in kind of some more in-depth opinions from me on that one, I wrote like a 1900-word blog post on it that's back on my personal blog. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. You can go read that. But yeah, that was pretty rough, but I don't consider the time I spent with that to have been wasted or anything, because I think the point that it was making that war is just kind of a unilaterally bad thing, even if it's every once in a while necessary, isn't the worst point for a work of media to be making. A lot of terrible stuff happens when weapons are handled and tempers flare and things get out of control. And I think that's a valuable message, even if maybe it wasn't handled in the most deft or slick way there.
I completely and totally agree. And this is something that is a point that I would like to make. It's not necessarily that a work is bad if it contains violence. I would say that a work is bad if it's...
Well, of course not, because we would have to throw out the Old Testament.
Exactly. But what I would say is, I think a work is probably bad if it celebrates pointless violence.
Yeah, which is why I was able to kind of play through Spec Ops The Line and just really think about that, and why I don't really play crime-based sandbox games. Once again, that line is in different places for different people. Yeah. That's my line. That's kind of where I don't want to go and feel that I personally shouldn't go. I know there are probably plenty of listeners out there that are able to play through some of the mayhem and craziness sandbox games, and they just get mayhem and craziness out of it, and they just see it for the comedy that it's kind of supposed to be, and they're fine with it. For some reason, I can't do it with that genre.
Yes, and it's, again, perfectly fine. If someone is uncomfortable experiencing something, then they shouldn't experience it. Or...
I don't know that discomfort is the best metric for that. I think...
And I said or there because I'm like, that didn't come out right.
Yeah. I think sometimes... I mean, if we're going to use the Spec Ops The Line, I remember feeling uncomfortable in a number of places in there, but the game was trying to do that.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think the things that it was making me feel uncomfortable about were things that I think people should feel a little uncomfortable about. So I don't know that discomfort is necessarily the term I would use. Maybe conviction is a better one. Like if you're starting to get the feeling not that, you know, this is really hard or challenging material, but what am I as a Christian doing consuming this? That's probably the time to step away.
Yeah, like, I started saying it, and I instantly said, that's not exactly what I meant to say.
Well, and feel free to clean it up and, you know, sound brilliant in the edit. I won't tell anybody.
I don't know if I can, because you have made a very brilliant point and thus stuck it in there. So, thank you, Peter. I'm going to have to probably stick with the whole me making a mistake in the editing. What I want to say is, you said the point brilliantly. The one thing I would add is, it's about what you think the value of the destination or the message that's trying to get across. If the message of Cross is that, hey, violence and evil is not quite good things, and this is actually what they do, and this is actually what they have with it. Like, I know in, I think, one of the endings of the new GTA 4, it's kind of a really bad ending. As much as we say bad things about GTA 4, and you can do some really horrible things, and Rockstar has put in some very terrible things in there, and I'm not saying that these are good games, they have put a okay message in there in certain points where it says, hey, if you join a gang, it's going to be hard to get out. You're going to have to do some pretty terrible, horrible things if you do that. And I have heard people from Rockstar state that opinion and say, this is why we put out games like that. And I can sort of give them on that. I don't think they need to go as far or include as many elements as they do. But again, that's my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, that's definitely a worthwhile message. I mean, I know from some of the reading that I did when I was working on my criminal justice degree that's definitely a worthwhile thing to float out there. But at the same time, I don't think that the folks at Rockstar are setting out entirely to make games that dissuade people from joining gangs.
I don't
want to just drum on Rockstar here, because there are plenty of other developers that have made stuff that is not exactly what you would call edifying.
I'm going to bring up Gearbox, which made the Gears of War thing, and
I think that was Epic. I think Gearbox is Borderlands and Dungeon Siege.
Well, Borderlands 2 kind of has some stuff in it. Like,
Borderlands is kind of silly about it, but yeah, I would definitely agree that there's some kind of pointlessness in there.
I played Borderlands. I enjoyed playing Borderlands, and it did teach you an interesting message about greed, though.
Yeah, well, and Borderlands is also satire, so I think maybe we should leave that one on the sidelines for the most part here, because we'd have to go into a whole episode on satire, and I definitely want Grant here if we do that. Do we want to cover anything else here, or do we kind of want to stick a fork in this
I have a couple other things that I want to bring up. The first time we had a conversation about doing an episode on video games, you mentioned that I had to watch one certain game, and it actually brings up a whole other reason why I don't think that video games and any media should be ever thrown out entirely, and that's because it's a great way to express concern over...
Are we talking about the review I pointed to you on Rock, Paper, Shotgun, or are we talking about the game that I told you
about? I was actually going to bring up both in a sort of roundabout way and connect them together.
Ah, okay. Well, go for it, and feel free to edit that line of questioning.
Another good thing that video games can do is, like stories, like movies, they can be valid forms to either edify or bring up criticism about a certain topic. And as Christians, these are tools that we can use to get our message out there, and they're tools that we can look at other people and see maybe ways that we can improve upon ourselves, because as the Bible quote goes, why look at your brother for the speck in his eye when you have a log in your own?
Right.
So this brings us up to Left Behind and The Binding of Isaac, which are two things you've brought to my attention.
Okay, so I'm going to disclaim this right now because I'm going to own this particular opinion. I'm a not super conservative in terms of theology Christian, as I'm sure the listeners have figured out. So I'm really not a fan of the Left Behind series. I think it's overly simplistic. I think it's legalistic. I think it's kind of bad fiction married to bad theology. And unfortunately, the video games that were based off of that can also add terrible game design to that equation. They tend to be very preachy, very condemning. It's not a very flattering depiction of Christianity, especially for outsiders, I think.
And that is a problem that there have been very good Christian books that have been written.
Oh, yeah.
For example, The Chronicles of Narnia, which is very Christian, and it's now being made into good Christian movies. And even before that, there were good Christian movies and TV shows that were put out there, like we mentioned earlier, Mickey and Me. However, in Christian video games, we have lacked in that, and some people have become very preachy about it. However, the other good thing is that there are video games out there that have very good messages, so there's no reason that a Christian-based video game can't work, or a game that espouses Christian values is impossible to have. It just needs to be embraced by the proper people who know how to make a good game first, and then how to put the message in there, because it'd be like someone who doesn't know how to write a good book, or make a good movie, but knows the Christian message. And so instead they focus on the Christian message. I'm sorry to say this, that needs to go as the secondary thing, because if it's not a good game, or a good movie, or a good book, you're shooting yourself in the foot right there.
Right. And then the second one that you brought up was The Binding of Isaac, where this was another one that I wound up playing and then writing, I think, a fairly lengthy blog post on. It's very critical of Christianity, and I don't think its criticism is particularly... He's not wrong. Edmund McMillan was raised in kind of a very harsh, kind of lip service-y Christian environment where people around him who had been pretty despicable themselves at earlier points in their life were very, like, unforgiving and condemning towards other people and used religious grounds on that. He brings a lot of that up in kind of a disgusting juvenile way in The Binding of Isaac. I had a hard time with that one because, like I said, he's not wrong on some of the stuff, but he's also obviously kind of bitter.
He's not wrong in what he's trying to get across, but the way he tried to get it across was not the correct way.
Yeah, but at the same time, I find it hard to blame him.
Exactly.
I've read some interviews with him. In fact, maybe I'll link a couple of those in our show notes. After reading that, he sounds like a fairly decent guy who I kind of feel bad for, quite frankly. I don't know, maybe someday somebody will treat him a little bit better from a Christian point of view, and he may find some reconciliation. I certainly hope so. It's But yeah, I think sometimes we as Christians can be a little harsh and judgmental when we shouldn't be, trying to pick specks out of other people's eyes while we've got planks in our own, or sometimes even an entire forest.
And as Jesus, you know, says, "Judge not, lest ye be judged," which is a very big thing that I think Christians have a hard time with today, which is
sure.
kind of sad.
And there's a, I think maybe not even just Christians, but people in general have some trouble with that. I think the problem with a lot of us as Christians is that we feel like we have such a high ground because of our faith that we can be much more blatant about it.
We think we have a high ground, but we forget we're human.
Yeah. Yeah, very well put.
And with being human comes all the flaws and all the ability to be wrong and be led into sin even when we think we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And which is why the greatest commandments, where you need to love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Because in doing those, you do everything else right.
Yep. And I think that actually is probably a good note to end this one on.
Yes. Again, this is definitely going to be a whole lot shorter, just looking at it right now, in content-wise. But I want to thank you all, guys, all for listening for this. We might hit on some of this stuff later when we have a full host.
Yeah.
So, but this is a great introductory topic on kind of putting forth the standard views that both me and Peter have on video games. And if we ever come back to a situation like this again, and Grant is with us, I'm sure Grant will be able to enumerate all of his beliefs of his positions on him.
And we did want to cover this because we're probably going to be referencing video games along with our other topics in the future, and we felt like this was kind of a necessary piece of ground that we needed to tread over. Unfortunately, we did have to do it without Grant, so thank you, listeners, for being patient with us while we were down a third of our hosting staff, and we will see you next time on Saving the Game.
Farewell.
This has been a production of Saving the Game, copyright 2012. This podcast may be redistributed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative license, provided that credit is given to savingthegamepodcast.org. Our music is by Ryan Humphrey. For past episodes, podcast news from our hosts, or to connect with us, visit our website at savingthegamepodcast.org. God bless, and happy gaming.